The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the New York Times bestselling author of Unlikely Friendships. She's got a brand new book, Unlikely Loves, Jennifer S. Holland. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Unlikely Loves. How different is this than your first book, Unlikely Friendships?
It's similar in a lot of ways. I use the word love playfully here, certainly. I don't assume that animals have the same exact emotions that we do. But I really looked for stories that had a really, really special bond between the animals, something that looked a lot like what we think of as love. And there were just so many wonderful stories left after we finished the first book that it just made sense to do another.
In your new book, Unlikely Loves, you say, you know, animals, even though we might think that they love us, they're probably just kind of begging for food or, you know, maybe scratching themselves behind the ear on you, right?
Well, you know, I think we all want to think that gooey-eyed look that the golden retriever gives us is love. And I think that our pets certainly have affection for us. I think that, you know that when you leave the house, the pets are very sorry you're not there. Animals have been shown to mourn. Animals certainly have the capability of having some of the same emotions that we have. But I don't assume that my dog loves me as much as his treats.
You know, I think I had a dog one time, and every time we left, it would like get into the garbage. I think it was mad. It was either mad at us or it was trying to redecorate the kitchen.
Yeah, I think probably the second. I get the impression that dogs are just kind of, whatever they're doing at that moment, it's just because they think that's the thing to do right then. It's not that they're thinking, oh, you know, I'm so mad that they left me here. It's just, ooh, trash can, let's see what's in there.
Unlikely Friendships, Unlikely Loves. How did this book come together? I mean, we're looking at a lot of different stories from a lot of different people. A lot of people like in, Europe also.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of coverage of this sort of thing, especially in the UK and in Australia. People really seem to be fond of these stories. So I really sought them from all over the world just because I love that variety. And just to show that this isn't something that only happens in U.S. zoos or in some particular location, it's really kind of a universal phenomenon.
Jennifer, how did you get the word out?
You know, a lot of friends and family have been sending me these things ever since I mentioned that I was going to write a second book. And I also put the word to the zoos and wildlife centers that I'd talked to in the past. There's a lot of wonderful photographs online, but you don't always know what's the backstory. So a lot of times I would find those photographs, track down the photographer, track down the owner of the animals, which is logistically interesting. But once I found that person, if there's a good story to tell, then we would move ahead.
Now, of course, working on a book like this, I see some great tax write-offs from traveling all over the world and getting these stories. Is that actually what happened?
Well, in these cases, I was able to do most of the work sitting at my desk, unfortunately. I write for National Geographic also, and so that's where I kind of get my travel bug taken care of. But for these books, I'm able to really work with people by phone or Skype.
On Unlikely Loves, you mentioned that friends, family members, others sending stories on this. When you first started Unlikely Friendships, how did people find out about what you were putting together and how did you get those stories?
Well, I actually did put the word out. Literally, I called a lot of places and let them know I was looking for stories. And again, just sought out photographs and short news pieces online that I thought I could report this more deeply and find out what really happened. How did this story really end? You know, is there still a happy ending? Are the animals still together? That sort of thing. So I was able to really reach out to a lot of people and get a lot of input.
Unlikely Loves, 43 heartwarming true stories from the animal kingdom, and I can tell you what, they are heartwarming stories. You wrote these other people sent you these, you took everything they wrote, you edited things. How did this happen?
In all cases, I conducted an interview or two with the people that were closest to the animals, who really knew what happened. And then I took that information and wrote the stories myself, and in some cases added value with other information, maybe a little bit of science thrown in there now and then. But the stories, I consider them to be these other people's stories. It's just they're sort of working through me. I'm telling them for those people.
They were okay with their names out there and everything?
Absolutely. Most people, I think only one person asked not to use her last name because she was a little concerned about people responding to how she was keeping her animals. But for the most part, everyone was thrilled to talk about it and to share their happy experiences.
This lady didn't have a puppy mill, did she?
She did not. No. I don't talk to those folks.
Now, with Unlikely Loves, like you mentioned, a lot of fantastic photographs in here. Some of the stories, what would be your favorite story maybe out of the two books?
Oh, that's a tough one. In the first book, I loved the story about the dogs and the cheetah, because there's kind of a neat juxtaposition of conservation messages there, where we have the dogs protecting the cheetahs in places like Namibia by chasing them away from the farm, so the farmers aren't shooting the cheetahs. And then in the States, in the zoos, they raise the dogs with the cheetahs as companions, and that keeps the cheetahs from getting too stressed in captivity. So there's kind of a neat double story there that I really enjoy. In the new book, there's a very fun story about a swan that fell in love with a boat shaped like a swan. And again, fell in love with, I put quotes around that, but decided that this was her mate and followed it around. And it's just, there's kind of a really great tale to be told there. So that was one of my favorites because it's so different.
National Geographic, of course, covers just a lot of things like this. What do you do for National Geographic? I guess you write, photograph maybe? What do you do?
I'm a writer there. I was on staff for about 10 years, and I'm now a contributing writer. And I write about science and natural history, anything from doing kind of a picture story about a particular species to a story I did on venom and how we're using venom in medicine. I've looked at the decline of amphibians. I've looked at the decline of honeybees, and some happier stories as well, not all about declines.
So what is your idea and maybe National Geographic's stance on the honeybee? Because there's a lot of talk about, genetically produced plants, maybe disease. So what's your idea on that?
What they've found so far is that there's a combination of factors that really seems to cause the problem for the bees. And I think that's the case with so many animals that are in decline, is there's not one smoking gun. They're kind of hoping there is one so they can easily fix it. But in this case, there's so many factors that affect bees. And, you know, we really need these insects to be working for us. And they have a lot of value, not just, of course, economic value, but just sort of intrinsic value. They're a part of the landscape. And so I think, the more they understand these different components, the more they can start to tackle them.
This is going on for several years now. When did you first do the story on that?
I believe it was 2006 that the story came out. I'd have to double check that. But yeah, we did a feature about the colony collapse disorder, is what they called it at the time. And I think they've kind of evolved a little bit away from CCD now, and they're looking at other problems. But there have always been cycles of decline going up and down with honeybees, but this has been unprecedented in terms of the numbers of bees that have died.
Are the numbers starting to come back?
I think that it's gone out of the media some, but my impression from the beekeepers is it's still a really big problem.
All right, now you have unlikely characters in this book on the cover. We see a golden retriever and a spotted cat, perhaps maybe a leopard.
A leopard, huh? Yes.
Well, can you tell me about this picture and maybe this story?
So really, this was just a wonderful story of a leopard that was being hand-raised, and the golden retriever on the property really took to this leopard and really showed kind of a parental kind of care for it. And even when the two were ultimately separated, they would come back together now and then and spend time together. And there was, a longer term bond there, even though they weren't living together anymore.
Most of the stories that I've read so far in Unlikely Loves come from the UK. They come from Poland. They come from overseas, I guess that the stories maybe are more known in that region of pets and owners than perhaps what's going on in the States?
I think, you know, in the UK in particular, I've noticed that some of their online newspapers really love these kinds of stories, and you see them covered very regularly. And that was a great source for me to find just a little tidbit on something and then to pursue it further and find out more. But really, it seems to happen everywhere. Everywhere I've looked, I've found examples of it. In some cases, I had to get someone to translate for me, a woman in Poland who didn't speak English. I had a friend who was able to communicate with her. So it's been great fun just to kind of get an international flavor into the books.
Jennifer, how about yourself? If you were writing a story in depth, what kind of animals would we be looking at that maybe you fell in love with, or animals that you've had that have fallen in love with each other?
I've had a couple of interesting experiences. There's always that time in life when you think that you're going to be the animal whisperer of some sort. I always expected to be the one to have that dolphin experience or that whale experience. And so far, I don't think that's really happened for me. But I did have a fun experience in my own home with my dog and a chameleon. I had a pet chameleon, and he had escaped his tank, and we thought that that was the end of him because they need moisture and warmth. And that day I saw my dog walking around with her mouth open a little bit, and I went over to her and put my hand out, and she spit Hank the chameleon into my hand, and he was still moving around, and she had probably saved him from drying out behind the bookshelf. So I don't know why she didn't chew. I don't know why she chose to keep him safe, but she did, and it was just kind of a wonderful moment for me since I've been writing about these stories all the time.
I think it would have been a playmate.
Perhaps. I don't know how they would have really, what they would have done together, but...
I guess as you looked at your dog and saw the tail sticking out of its mouth, that might have raced the heart a little bit, didn't it?
Just for a moment there, I wasn't too sure what the outcome was going to be, but thankfully it worked out just fine.
We had a dog, we've got a dog, and it seems like this dog just loves things. And one time I had a little bird that fell out of the tree, and I brought it in kind of to feed it. I didn't know what I was doing. The dog was pretty interested in it. She didn't munch it or anything, so I think she would have taken care of it if I would have let her after reading Unlikely Loves. And we had a cat also that this dog just loved. The cat wasn't sure about the dog, but we just put them together. I think the dog got beat up a little bit before they became best friends. What should I have done if I'm bringing maybe an animal home like this, a cat with sharp claws, to a poor, defenseless 5-foot dog?
Well, I think you probably did the right thing. I think they have to figure it out for themselves. And I do think, especially in a captive situation in a household where the animals are well taken care of, they aren't worrying about survival. They're not having to hunt. They're not competing. And so I think that they're going to be, you know, more apt to have a positive relationship, a friendship of sorts, because they have the luxury of doing that. They're not worrying about other things. But I think oftentimes the dog has to get scratched and bitten a few times before they sort of figure out the hierarchy in the house.
Yeah, and I guess as you have a cat, an animal in the house, I mean, like you say, you're feeding them and everything. They're not even mousers anymore like maybe they used to be.
That's right. That's right. And that's why it's so surprising when you see these things in the wild, because you wonder, you know, why wouldn't these animals be enemies, because they're competing, or one is predator and one is prey. And yet sometimes the maternal instinct or paternal instinct, or perhaps just a need for companionship, maybe a little bit of confusion on the part of a young animal, will bring animals together that you would never expect.
What was one of the biggest challenges of Unlikely Loves and Unlikely Friendships?
I think just the logistics of tracking down people. If I found a story I really wanted to tell and I want to get more information, I'm not going to trust the caption that I read on the internet on some random website. So trying to find the right person and you know, just getting the information, getting the true story was difficult in some cases, but well worth it.
Unlikely Loves, of course, your brand new book, working for National Geographic. That's a pretty prestigious job, I'll bet, as a writer. How did you end up at National Geographic. That's got to be a great story.
It's been a wonderful experience, and I was very, very lucky to get in there. I was always big into writing ever since I was a little kid, and always big into animals. And so I kind of worked my way through undergraduate English and then a graduate program in conservation biology. And combining this science and writing, I had sort of a good niche to fill at Geographic. And so I was able to get on staff there and just write about the things that I love.
How has things changed in the writing business with National Geographic? I'm sure that you go along with the photographers. You're seeing everything firsthand and writing about it.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. There's a lot more use of freelance writers. Certainly, I think all magazines have shrunk in terms of the numbers of staffers that they have. It's really a new world. And there's a lot more focus on the online presence. The magazine still is a very important component at the society, but I think that the online media is becoming more and more important, and you're going to see more of that.
Maybe you don't know about the business side of National Geographic, to say, but how would a magazine like that, who sells subscriptions, who sells advertising in something solid like a book, make money online?
I think they're trying to figure that out, too. I'm not really sure how that all works. I haven't seen much in the way of advertising yet. I know that they prefer not to go that direction, but I think that's the way of the world. So I'm not really sure, but I think I'll be keeping an eye on that as well.
I'm sure that you're too young to have gone out with National Geographic when they had film. I'm sure it's all been digital for you. That's got to be a big change for them.
It was a really big shift. I actually was there before the digital cameras became big.
1 year, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm older than I look. But it was a hard transition. And I think there are a few photographers who have held out to some degree. But I think it's been a positive shift overall because there's so much they can do. And it's less expensive. And I think it's been, you know, an avenue for younger photographers to get involved and to really kind of make their mark.
Have you ever had a story that you've really wanted to do but weren't able to do for the magazine?
Oh, sure. Many times. They're very picky, and just because you pitch a story doesn't mean they're going to approve it. They're very focused, of course, on the photography, and so if a story doesn't have a clear visual component, it might not be approved for the magazine. You have to be very creative in how you're going to illustrate something if it's more of a text-related story.
So that's on the writer, actually, to come up with ideas and then pitch it to the magazine like that.
Exactly.
I just figured maybe they would say, hey, we've got this story over here in Africa. It's about the elephants, you know, they're stealing the tusks, and they send you out.
Right. Well, it comes variety of ways, actually. So sometimes the editors come up with a story, sometimes photographers pitch their own stories, and sometimes the writers do. So it comes from all directions.
I was going to say, it almost sounded like the writers were more creative, I guess.
Well, we like to think so, but I'm sure the photographers would disagree.
Well, with a book like this, Unlikely Loves, you get to pretty much put this together the way you want to, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. And my publisher for this, Workman Publishing in New York, they have wonderful, wonderful staff, and they do a beautiful job of making it a book that you want to pick up. I give them full credit for that. But it was great fun to be able to write the stories the way I wanted to. They gave me a lot of freedom. And I'm actually working on a third book in the series. It will be a little different, and I won't mention what it is yet. But again, they've kind of let me evolve as I've done this and kind of figure out where I want to head with it.
Well, that'll be pretty cool. Now, you know, we were talking earlier about the pictures in this book. Who is responsible for this? Do you have like a bunch of photographers for this? Did you have one? How did these pictures, which are so beautiful and Unlikely Loves, where did you find all these photographers?
The photographs came from a variety of sources, like the stories. In many cases, the people that own the animals submitted photographs. In some cases, we might have to hire a photographer to shoot. But in most of the cases, I actually found a photograph first or made sure that a story had photos already associated with it before I went ahead with it, because clearly the photos are a very important part of these books.
In Unlikely Loves, there was a story about a lady and a moose, and they find this poor little moose, and the legs kind of busted up, and they put it in a homemade
peg leg of sorts.
Yeah, and I think it was named after a pilot or a pirate.
That's right, and Jack. They called him
Jack, and I was so worried that here is this lady who isn't all that muscular. I mean, she's pretty thin and everything, and these moose, they can weigh, what, 800 pounds or more?
It can be a really, really dangerous animal, and that's one of the reasons that story is so incredible, is that she mothered this moose, really. She raised it working at a wildlife facility in Alaska, and even though she had to eventually leave and you know, go to school, when she returned, the moose knew her and treated her just as it had when she had been living there. So it's a really, really heartwarming story. I always try to include just a couple or a few people animal stories, even though most of them are non-human stories, but that was a special one for me.
With a book like this, Unlikely Loves, I'm reading this, I might want to go out and get my own moose, but that's kind of a dangerous thing, isn't it?
Yeah, be careful. I probably should put in the introduction, you know, do not try this at home, but hopefully readers get the picture that, you know, these are unusual circumstances when a human encounters a wild animal that way, and they won't go running out looking for them.
You know, another favorite story that I had was the sheep, and the sheep was almost, the sheep in the burrow, I think it was the burrow that was left alongside the road tied up, and luckily this family, and I think that they had a refuge for animals, got the burrow and the sheep. It was like magic.
Yeah, it was. And in that case, the sheep actually was attacked by a dog, and the donkey came to the rescue and really, truly saved the sheep's life, just completely bit into this dog and ripped it off. And the sheep was in rough shape, but eventually recovered.
Would you say Unlikely Loves, and along with Unlikely Friendships, there is maybe a magic in these books?
I think so. I think people... these days, there's so much negative stuff going on out there, and there's something about these stories that's very uplifting and very positive and hopeful, and I think we really, really need that right now. And so my hope is to bring these stories to people and bring them hope.
When people get Unlikely Loves, your brand new book with 43 heartwarming true stories from the animal kingdom, and of course, a few people in there, we are animals after all, what do you want the reader to take away from these stories?
Well, I think other than that feeling of hope, and hopefully a few laughs, because I try to be entertaining in the writing, I think we don't really understand exactly what animals feel, but the scientists are understanding more and more about this. And the more we look at the mammalian brain, the more we see overlap with our own mammalian brain. And although, again, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily the same thing, I think the more we look at animals and see something that runs parallel to us, the more we're going to treat them properly, the more we're going to care about them. And I think we owe them that.
A lot of people, most people, I can't say most people, but a lot of people have dogs, a lot of people have cats, but looking at dogs, I mean, they might go outside, you let them outside, maybe they're house dogs, they come in, they're not smelling too good, maybe they bring you in like that mole or something, really, you shouldn't really yell at them, they're kind of proud of that, aren't they?
That's right, exactly, and as I said before, they really, whatever they're doing at that moment, I think is just what they think is the right thing to do. I don't think that they're holding a grudge or doing anything to purposefully make you angry. And it's hard not to yell at them when they come in muddy feet and stinking of something, but I think we have to just appreciate that they're trying to please us. That's what dogs are really about.
Give them a treat and say, attaboy.
That's right.
All right, Jennifer, let's talk about maybe a website that you might have with Unlikely Friendships, Unlikely Loves. Is there a way maybe if I have that special heartwarming story that I might get that to you? Maybe not.
Absolutely. Well, Unlikely Friendships has a Facebook page, so that's one way to connect with us. You can also go on the Workman Publishing website, to connect with the books. And then I have a personal website. My company is called Cuttlefish Prose, and you can go to cuttlefishprose.com, and there are links to purchasing any of the books and the calendars also that go with the book.
I think I used to sleep with a cuttlefish once. Is it the only cuddling I ever got?
They're a little slimy. I don't know if that's such a good idea.
So what is a cuttlefish?
Cuttlefish is a cephalopod. It's like an octopus, squid, that family. C-U-T-T-L-E instead of the other kind. But amazing animals, really amazing animals.
When I go to that website, am I going to find out maybe what's happening in your life with your writings, perhaps where you might be in a city if I'm out and about?
Yes, there are links to some of the press appearances that I'm making and little tidbits about some of the upcoming projects as well.
All right, well, the brand new book is Unlikely Loves. Hey, check out Unlikely Friendships also. With this book, it is heartwarming. It really is. Reading this, you might need a box of Kleenex nearby because some of the stories will just tug at your heart. Other ones are just going to make you laugh out loud. Jennifer S. Holland, she's the author. Jennifer, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me on.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Jennifer S. Holland, author of her brand new book, Unlikely Loves. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.